a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth.
And I'm Alethea Kasbin.
Everyone, get used to Alethea's voice because this is the first episode of the great WDET and Gong War merger. Now, every week, Alethea and or Zach Gorchow are going to be joining me to talk about the latest in Michigan politics. And the big item we have to talk about this week is redistricting.
Yes, so redistricting, the citizen-led commission that many remember voters, you know, created when it was on the ballot in 2018, is in a little bit of chaos right now. Last month, a panel of federal judges ordered the commission to redraw 13 House and Senate districts, which is, you know, a pretty big deal given the House has elections coming up this year. And, you know, the reason that this lawsuit came up is because some Detroiters sued saying that these districts disenfranchised them. They were controversial. They kind of start in the city, go out in the suburbs. And the judges said, hey, look, you know, these districts used race as a predominant factor. And this violated the equal protection rights of these voters who sued. So this week we talked to House Speaker Joe Tate, who is from Detroit. And he actually holds one of the districts that needs to be redrawn here. And when we asked him if he agreed with the Detroiters who sued over this, this is what he said.
I think we know that the process, just like any process, I mean, with the Independent Redistricting Commission, it was the first time that they went through it. It wasn't a perfect process. We know that we had, there were some things that came up, I mean, through the commenting process. But also, I think looking at the landscape of the outcomes that came out of it, I think that's something that, you know, we should also be looking at as well, too. I'm the first Black speaker in Michigan's history. And part of that, you can argue, was because the lines were drawn by an independent redistricting commission versus a partisan legislature.
I mean, this is a case that is just full of twists and turns, and it's all getting more and more urgent by the day because we have a massive election coming up in November. So, Alethea, what is happening with the commission right now?
Yeah, so the commission is, you know, appealing this decision, but the only way that you can appeal this is to the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is very high stakes. They can go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Maybe the U.S. Supreme Court comes through and agrees with them. Maybe they don't. But for now, they have until February 2nd, which is very soon, to redraw these 7 House districts. And that'll give time for public comment and all of that. But because of these elections in November, House candidates have until April to decide if they want to run, to file. You kind of want to know what your district looks like. You want to know if you're an incumbent, if your district is affected. Because while they have to redraw 7, it is unlikely, you know, that it will be contained to just 7. Like, some other districts will be affected as they try to redraw these. There's a lot of open questions right now about what is going to happen in the next, you know, couple of weeks.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the internal drama going on among commission members, which doesn't make things any easier.
No, there, you know, in the backdrop of all of this, there has been some drama, which the court, you know, has also used kind of in its decision making when it's deciding, you know, can the commission redraw these maps? Should we appoint a special master to redraw these maps? It's also looking at what's going on in the commission. So right now, in the last 2 or 3 weeks, 3 commissioners have resigned. 2 of them were living out of state. One of them, I don't know, maybe didn't want to redraw districts and resign. So we have 3 new members on this body as they are looking at this tall task of very quickly redrawing some maps. We have commissioner infighting. You know, 2 of them are trying to get each other kicked off of the commission. So there's just a lot going on, dramatically, even outside of what the court is ordering here.
We spoke to Speaker Tate more about all of this redistricting drama, as well as about his predictions for the upcoming year and what's going on with the great Republican schism that seems to be happening in Michigan. You can hear that whole conversation if you stick with us right after this break.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Mishmash. I'm Shayna Roth. I'm here with Alethea Kasbin.
Hello.
And Zach Gorchow.
Hello.
Both of Gongwer, and the three of us are joined for our inaugural interview by Speaker of the House, Representative Joe Tate. Speaker Tate, welcome to Mishmash.
Oh, thanks for having me, Shayna. I appreciate it.
Alethea, take us away.
Okay, so today was the first day of House session for the year. Right now, the House is at 54-54, evenly split between the Democrats and the Republicans. So we know for a little bit, the Democrats, the party that you lead, the party that has control of the legislature, right now can't do anything alone without Republicans coming on. So what issues do you think are ripe for bipartisan action in these first few months of the year?
Yes. So I guess... to answer that question, looking back at last year, I think we were able to do quite a bit in a bipartisan fashion. The majority of the bills that we did have were bipartisan. So we're looking to build off of that and build off the work that we've done in 2023 into 2024. So I think there are a few things that come to mind in terms of potential overlap that we see. So continuing to lower costs for Michigan families. So we worked on the earned income tax credit expansion, as well as the pension tax repeal. Also, looking into that space around prescription drug costs, I think that's a good place for us to pick up where we left off last year. We did some work around drug immunity, repealing that. Within the realm, kind of continuing that is also community and economic development. So we did a bipartisan package around an R&D tax credit as well as Renaissance zones. So I think there's some more opportunities for us to continue that. And then finally, around the budget, I think there are some places that we should all agree on there. So I think there are definitely opportunities, and I think there is going to be a lot of overlap there. It's just going to be us, being able to cooperate, receiving cooperation from the other side of the aisle.
Well, Mr. Speaker, have you had any conversations with the minority leader, the leader of the Republicans in the House, Matt Hall, and said, look, we know there's a number of things we're not going to agree on, but here's a list of things we think we can do that aren't as partisan over these first few months? Or is this all still yet to be seen what can be achieved?
Well, my conversations with the minority leader have continued to center around, share power, which the rules don't allow for that. So we're still trying to identify, what could be something that we could work on together. And I think there are some one-offs that House Republicans have expressed in terms of what they want to look at. But unfortunately, at this point in time, from the minority leader, I haven't really received, what could be those overlaps. I have been pretty public in terms of, what we want to look at. But we haven't kind of seen his policy agenda or some of those ideas that he wants to work on for 24 yet.
There had been some discussions about with the Republican leaders about maybe this sort of shared power arrangement. Is that something that you would be interested in pursuing? Is that a possibility on the table at all? Or is it you guys have the numbers and that's that?
We do. Well, we passed, our House rules at the beginning of last year. And right now there is no shared power agreement there. We will be coming back at full strength here in the middle of April, as was discussed earlier. But it just doesn't allow for it, just the way that we are right now. I felt that we've moved, we should move past that because we're just not in that situation with shared power. So I think for us, finding those opportunities and those policies that we can work together on feels to me kind of the best place as we continue to find and govern and do work for the people of Michigan.
you know, just to sort of set the table a little bit about the conversation on shared power. So when that's happened in the past, it was, you know, 55 Democrats were elected, 55 Republicans. So it's evenly split based on elections. So right now the House is at 54-54, but two seats are outstanding, you know, that are likely going to be Democratic seats come April when those special elections are had. So that's kind of, that's what you mean when you say the rules don't allow for it, because these special elections are out there. This isn't, the House isn't sitting at evenly split because of the elections.
Correct. Correct. And it's outlined in our House rules. So there's a 55, you have to get to 55 with that, but we won't have that. You know, when those seats, those vacated seats are filled, which I'm very confident they're going to be filled by Democrats, we'll be back at full strength again. So this is just a short period of time in terms of being 54-54, but not share power.
Right, right. So, you know, speaking of elections, the House has, you know, one coming up later this year, and we're put in a little bit of turmoil right now, I think, with the redistricting decision coming down from the federal court saying that 7 state House districts, including yours, need to be redrawn here in a couple of weeks. You know, what is your level of concern, you know, with that sort of looming at the beginning of an election year?
I think for us, I guess just to start off, you know, we're going to hear the obviously what the three-judge panel will move forward with, and at this point that we're talking, I know there's a February 2nd deadline for redrawing those lines. A couple of points there is, I think obviously that the intent is having an independent redistricting commission, and that was done through a ballot initiative by the will of the people, but it is, you know, a little bit, I think as you dig a little bit deeper, you know, there are questions that come up and say, is this actually something that that will be beneficial for Black Detroiters? And Tommy Stallworth, a former state representative, I know he came out with an op-ed recently in the Michigan Chronicle, kind of talking a little bit about this around is, you know, it is, does this make sense in terms of what this looks like, and is this actually going to meet the intent of who brought the case forward? And I think those are questions that are still outstanding, but obviously, you know, it's in the court's hands, or the commission's hands now, to redraw the lines. But I think when you look at our caucus and you look at the outcomes of 2022, Democrats were able to, you know, the maps were more fair in a partisan fashion. You saw our caucus, you know, become more diverse across the board. And then through that, I think you've seen policies that have been, you know, will have a significant impact on diverse communities across the state, including Detroit. So again, I think that's something that, you know, we're going to see how things come out. I don't think that's going to impact our majority because of the seats that they are looking at. But it's something that we're keeping a close eye on.
Do you agree with the Detroiters who sued over the maps that they disenfranchise Black candidates and voters, or are they wrong?
I think we know that the process, just like any process, I mean, with the Independent Redistricting Commission, it was the first time that they went through it. It wasn't a perfect process. You know, we know that we had, there were some things that came up, I mean, through the commenting process. But also, I think looking at the landscape of the outcomes that came out of it, I think that's something that, you know, we should also be looking at as well, too. You know, I'm the first Black speaker in Michigan's history, and part of that, you can argue, was because the lines were drawn by an independent redistricting commission versus a partisan legislature. So I think that's something that should be taken into account. Obviously, the Senate Majority Leader, first female Senate Majority Leader in Michigan's history, I think that should be taken into account as well, too. But I certainly don't disagree that it was an imperfect process, but also looking at the larger context and the outcomes of that, I think that should be weighed in and factored in as well.
I'm curious, was anything different for you when it comes to campaigning under the new maps compared to previously campaigning under the original district?
For the district that I represent, it wasn't much of a difference. So I come to the Lower East Side of Detroit. So prior to representing House District 10, it was House District 2. So it went, it covered about half of the district that I currently represent. And I think for me, there were a lot of commonalities there. So essentially have a big part of Detroit and then into the entering suburbs on the east side, so the Grosse Pointe communities too. So for that district, it didn't, it wasn't something that was too unusual, going from prior to the lines being drawn by an independent redistricting commission.
But on a fundamental level, this idea of looping together pieces of Detroit, small slices of Detroit, small slices north of 8 Mile in Oakland or Macomb counties, does that make sense to you as far as putting together a district of 90,000 people for a House seat or 270,000 for a Senate seat?
I think it can. I'll be the first to admit I'm not was never involved in this process. So even as a legislator, so it was something that I was never involved in. But when you look at some of the factors that they were obviously taking into account, I know communities of interest was something that occurred. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Again, if I look at the district that I represented. Even before that, I had, the Lower East Side of Detroit, so the majority African American working class families, and then you look at, the Grosse Pointe, and that was, obviously the in some ways opposite, but in some ways there are a lot of commonalities. But if you look at different parts of Metro Detroit, I don't think it's out of the question. When you look at, the historical trends and kind of movement of population. Southfield is one area that comes to mind. It's a majority African-American city. Now you look at Oak Park. Those are both communities north of 8 Mile. So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility when you're looking at some of these seats and how they're drawn.
So moving back to sort of more policy things, in the fall, the governor proposed a mandatory paid family leave proposal. That got a lot of attention, when she first gave her fall agenda speech, but hasn't seen a lot of action really since then. Do you think that proposal is dead, or does that have any, chance in the legislature this year?
I would say that there have been a lot of conversations, I think, around that. I think there is additional debates and just figuring out, okay, what makes sense around it. I think conceptually everyone's, in a really good place there, because we know that, that is something that's important, not only to families, but to our economy. In terms of what that's going to look like, it's hard to say if that's something that'll be taken up with legislation this year. There's also been additional conversations around childcare, which I know is not the exact same thing, but there's definitely a resemblance in terms of what that idea is around. So I don't know if we're going to get there this legislative session, with what we've done with that, but they're going to continue to be conversations and really figure out what that's going to look like, too. I think there's also been a lot of exploration around other states and kind of what they do and how they structure those that do have, you know, paid family leave programs in their state too. So I think there's going to be a lot of deep diving and seeing what other states do too.
So you're close allies with Mayor Duggan, and he's a big champion of the changes to auto no fault that were signed into law in 2019. I mean, I don't want to make, you know, put words in your mouth, but in general, you've seemed disinclined to move toward rolling back what the 2019 law did, specifically the 45% reduction to the catastrophic care clinics. The Senate has passed a bill that would rectify that, but the House so far has not. And Representative Brenda Carter, who is heading up this issue for the House, seems to have a lot of concerns about what the Senate passed. Do you want to change this, or do you feel like the law is working and should stay in place?
No, I think so. I was here in 2019 when we did, you know, we made the although no fault changes and reforms. I think that has pointed us in the right direction, but also, you know, we've had some time now since those the entire piece of legislation, that package, went into effect. So we know that, you know, there can be that there probably are some changes that are required. In terms of how sweeping those changes are, I think that's going to be end up being the question, I think, for this, because we know in 2019, I mean, you saw it, and I was a supporter of it because, in part, we know the issues that we've had in Southeast Michigan and Detroit around about auto insurance rates. So I think there are some opportunities to move and change things. And as you mentioned, you know, Chair Brenda Carter has been working diligently around that. So I think that there is something that we can come together and on consensus with. But we know, you know, just what Chair Carter and the Insurance Committee has been doing. They want to make sure that, you know, we're getting as close to right as possible in terms of, you know, what this can look like for. So I know we appreciate the work that the Senate has done, but there's also some work that we're going to be doing, continuing to do. But I think there is, I think, you know, in terms of us needing to look at it and, you know, making, you know, auto insurance, the rates, and then also obviously the care that's associated with it, making sure that we're getting it right.
Going back to Governor Gretchen Whitmer, she will be giving her State of the State this month. What are you hoping that she touches on in her speech? What are you going to be listening for?
I think for me, what we talked about before around, you know, the economic development piece, I think there is a continued interest. Obviously, she took quite a bit of leadership in forming the Growing Michigan Together councils, the GMTC, and having those strategies published. I think, you know, how are we kind of moving and really embracing this knowledge economy? And as we begin to, our economy is being so dynamic, so how can we remain competitive there? So I think economic development is going to play a big role in that. And going back to some of the work that we have done in the House last year around R&D tax credit and some other items that we've had, including the budget as well too. I think that'll be some, you know, that'll be an area I'll be interested in as she discusses, as she has her State of the State and as she gives her State of the State.
So the switching gears quite a lot, the Michigan Republican Party finds itself in a little bit of chaos as well right now. They have sort of kicked out their chair. They're fighting between the two of them. You know, as a Democrat, do you think about this? Does this mean anything to you? Does it make you feel more confident heading into 2024? Sort of what are your thoughts on all of that that's going on?
Yeah, that's a great question. Our focus is really around the work that we've been doing. I know for my colleagues, my caucus colleagues, I think us being able to tell our story in terms of what we've done this past year for Michigan residents and families is something that we want to continue to communicate. So just seeing on the outside in terms of what's going on there, but our focus has remained on us. We'll see what happens. I know that it's a pretty fluid situation from my understanding right now. Our focus is going to be how are we going to continue to govern at the end of the day.
How confident are you in President Biden leading the ticket for the Democratic Party right now? Obviously, polls are way, way away from the election, but a couple pollsters that typically have shown him overperforming how he eventually finished Epic MRA and Glenn Gariff show him trailing former President Trump.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think for the president has my full throat support. I think that in terms of what he's been able to do for this country, I think is, the way he's shown leadership has just been certainly a positive, I think, for our country and Michigan in particular, just in terms of the work that he's been able to do. But I think also for us, with what we're seeing and what we've been able to do as a House Democratic Caucus and the legislation that we've been able to pass, I mean, significant pieces of legislation, whether it's around putting more money in people's pockets or gun violence reduction, something that we haven't been able to do over a decade, really resonates with people. So I think when you look at Democrats in a state, Michigan residents trust Democrats. And I think that is something that we'll see as we get closer to November. And I think as you mentioned, Zach, we're a long way out, and I think we'll see as Michigan residents start really getting engaged, and I know they have their lives, but once they really start, I think looking at who's on the ballot, who will be at the top of the ticket, I think I think just like past elections that we've seen even last year in other states, I think we'll see that interest to continue with supporting Democrats.
Okay. Speaker of the House, Joe Tate, thank you so much for joining us for our first mishmash with WDET and Gongwer. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to our guest, Speaker Joe Tate from Detroit. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station, in collaboration with the Gongwer News Service. Mishmash is hosted and produced by me, Shayna Roth, and Gongwer's Zach Gorchow and Alethea Kasbin. Additional production and editing is by the always magnanimous and exciting Hearns Laguerre Jr. Mixing, mastering, and music by Sam Bobian. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, and Jenny Sherman. And our news director is the delightful Jerome Vaughn. And our podcast manager is the intrepid David Lyons. As always, if you listen to this podcast and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review or comment wherever you listen. You can subscribe or follow us on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, basically wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you tell your friends about how much you've learned from Mishmash and send them a link. Stuff like that really helps us get the word out. Remember, we're produced by a public radio station, which means we are listener supported. So if you really, really like this podcast, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give and become a member of WDET at WDET.org. We'll talk to you next week.